And now, the International Vienna for Everyone. And now, the International Vienna for Everyone.
They do it to us, you know? Construction site workers do this to us.
You want to put your headphones on?
No.
What do they do to you?
They just like call you, cat call you.
Cat call you?
How you call it? Cat calling, that's when...
When you call a lady on the street?
Yes.
What do they say?
E poupe.
E poupe?
Not necessarily. Sometimes it's just like, you know,
so
like, hey, you know, just like provoking, like, you know, nice skirt, nice legs.
But you say that also if you were going to say to a man, e poupe, right?
Why not?
So it's a gender neutral...
I guess we make it then. Why not, right? I mean, it's also, there's Barbie and there's Ken, right?
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, he wanted to talk about cats, so...
Yeah, cat calling, amazing, perfect.
Do you own a cat? You
two.
Own the British short hair, right?
No, it's trash panda style, oh, no.
You're not the one with the British short hair, all right, sorry, wrong guest.
It's all right, no, I have two cats, one's from trash, the other one's from some part of Austria, from
a
Bahnhof, yeah.
So, how old are you? I have no idea.
8 and 6. I know, they're my kids, so.
How long have you been having them for? Since they were?
Yeah, like I think 5 weeks each.
How is it like? Did you feed them warm milk with the... How is it called?
With a... yeah.
What kind of name?
I know. What's it called? Yeah, it's gonna come back later. Yeah. No, these were able to eat by themselves, but like once I rescued a cat that was 2 weeks old, so I bottle fed it.
Yeah, bottle fed it. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so it was on a schedule like every 2 hours or something. So yeah, now the cat weighs 7 kilos, so I did a great job.
But did they fight with each other? Because you were out all day, right?
Yeah, that's why we got the second cat for the first cat, so it would not get bored. They do fight, but the thing is we have cameras that we turn on when we leave for a longer period of time, and I can see on the camera that they also sleep together. Like not in a, you know, just in a very friendly way.
I didn't understand it in any other way.
Yeah, it's just my brain.
Yeah. But it's funny because I also got a cat when my dog was lonely, and I got him a cat.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
And with just trying to make one pet feel less lonely, and then we just put in prison another pet and we leave them home all day. But we think that at least there are two of them.
Yeah, exactly.
They're friends with each other.
That's amazing. You know, like especially cats, they like to have something happening, you know, so that this way they entertain each other.
But you are sensible about animals. We saw a dead pigeon just before on
Thanks
the street.
Thanks for reminding me.
And you wanted to do something about it.
Yeah, I always tried.
Like, what could you do?
I could check whether it's actually still alive and try to call the animal rescue. Like I call. I think they have me on. They know that.
They have your number.
They have my number.
Wait, you did that before?
Like, for instance, at Schönbrunn, sometimes there's, like, foxes, and if the tail is thin, that means that they have something, like scabies, and I sometimes call to let them know that, hey, there's a fox there, you know, go check it out. And they actually are happy about it because since they live in colonies, they could actually give it to each other, so, you know.
Like, what's the number?
I don't know.
Or the name?
I think it's just, like, Wildtierschutz, you know.
Okay.
But, yeah. It's,
so you're an expert in saving animals.
I mean, I come from Romania, so I did that.
What's the thing with the bears? I saw news that 52 or 42 people have been attacked by bears recently.
Yeah.
What's going on?
So, I mean,
it's a big country, I know, but...
Yeah, but the thing is, like, they go... The problem actually starts by the fact that we go on their territory. And I say we because I think it's not... I mean, it's happening in Romania, but it's also happening in other places, right? So once you build homes closer and closer to their homes, of course they will come back, you know, like they will, their territories are getting smaller. And the biggest problem is actually that people feed them. And once they realize that, hey, I don't have to fight for this, I just, you know, look cute and I'm going to get something to eat, you know, this perpetuates a problem. So they just come closer and closer to the people, and people are just dumb, you know. They feed them, they shoot, you know, videos for Instagram, look at me, I'm, you know,
here's
so
a bear.
there's even
It's a wild animal.
I've seen an influencer that actually came to Romania because, you know, like, it's almost guaranteed that if you drive on this particular road, you will run into some bears. So, you know, they advertised it. So now people are like, oh, you know, I want
to... Let's go see a bear. And let's go to the zoo. Oh, but the bear is wild and alive and he's going to eat us. And what do you expect?
But do you know that there's like this joke going around now that women prefer bears over over men sometimes?
What? No.
That's the joke? It's not...
But you should look into...
Let's just say you should look into it. It's like very... It's a funny... Not so funny thing, you know? It's like... Because, you know, there's a lot of, like, if you've listened to murder podcasts and stuff like that, you know, a bear would not cut your limbs off and refrigerate them. But let's not talk about this.
No, there's nothing else I want to talk about. Please tell me more.
Photography. There's this...
Where did you see this? And please, if someone else knows
about it. It's just like meme culture.
Really?
Yeah. It's meme culture, but probably more in the feminist meme culture side of things. But yeah,
it's a different world there.
I Google it. It's just But the thing is, like, if someone knows about this, they will find the joke funny. If they don't, then they should Google it.
The only thing about the bears, I know it's the bear, the series, the bear. I don't know if you watched that one. It was a good one.
With there was Leo.
No. Okay. I don't think he ever done series, but there's the Jeremy Allen Wright, I think is his name. It's a cool one. For maybe you can share it with the other people who know the joke.
Okay, just the one joke.
But is the government taking any action, or who was the one to advertise this location?
I have no idea. Like, I'm not that connected to the issue, you know. I just know because it's
on the news.
It's on the news, you know. But the problem is that there's also the thing is, to be honest, I also don't really want to talk about it that much because I don't have all the facts, and I think it's, you know, not something that I want to perpetuate without having all the information. Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely an issue, and you know, I guess people should just take animals a bit more serious.
And then also expect that if you go to the wild territory, wild things going to happen.
Yeah, like my dad is a geologist and we have like a house in Transylvania. And as a child, I used to go, you know, we used to go hunting for like stones, basically. Like not gemstones, but like half precious, semi-precious stones. And... as a child, he coached me, like, you know, you make a lot of noise, you know, if you see some, like, fresh marks, you just, you know, don't go running in that direction. That's, I also think it starts, you know, with parents explaining that, you know, this is serious, don't, you know, go looking for it, don't take selfies with the bear.
There is a similar story. Once I was hiking a mountain back home in Albania with a few friends, and it was... had snowed recently, and we see the bear paw. And what we do, we don't do the most logic thing to go back, but we go forward.
Yeah.
And because we were equipped to go on the mountains, we all had a knife, a small knife actually, which was, I think, as long as my finger, not longer than that. And it was ridiculous because we took out the knife, like what could have we possibly done to the bear? Nothing happened. There was no bear. We took the pictures of the footprint, and we took it when we went downstairs. We asked the villagers, this is not a bear footprint. This is a wolf footprint. They said, that's a relief. Yeah. But we are looking for it, and we don't go back when we see it. We like to go further.
Yeah. It's just morbid curiosity, right?
But you're from Transylvania, right? Tell me more about Dracula. Why is it? Do you know anything why their story originates from there?
Nope.
It's interesting.
But I guess it's good PR for Romania.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, you know, there used to be this guy, Vlad Tepes, you know, who was, you know, doing all sorts of very, you know, inhumane stuff, you know, to people who were not respecting the law. And that's how it all originated. But yeah, you know, it's just right now it helped Romina actually gain some positive popularity. Mm. So, you know, I'm not mad about it. There's a castle you can visit, yeah. You know, it's just like...
Do you go back home often?
No.
When was the last time you've been there?
I think in July. So I go
so
like...
now it's about a month and something?
Yeah, I go so two or three times a year.
Okay.
So no, it just... yeah, I think that's it.
But you've been here for a long time.
10 years now.
10 years?
Mm.
How does it feel?
Vienna?
Life in Vienna and you after 10 years, what's different? What's your... how did you change as a person from the first one? You, I mean, I know that your pictures have improved.
Hopefully.
Because I've seen your old pictures that you posted once on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
And I love those ones because it's exactly... how old were you then? 10 years ago or something?
No, even longer. I think the really, really bad ones, I think I was like about 13, 14. Like, I think it was my first camera ever. I'm glad they improved. I'm glad. Otherwise, I could not make a living out of it, could I? Or, you know, I think you have to be especially bad to make a living out of really bad pictures. Yeah. And I'm not that, no. I mean, Vienna is definitely feels like home right now.
It does?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like Vienna. I like that I can be grumpy. I can be my true self. And, you know, I've made a lot of connections and... I would say some friends, even though I know it's a myth among, you know, expats, immigrants. But yeah, it's just, like I said, it feels like home.
What was the first idea or impulse you said, I'm going to Vienna, I'm moving to... did you move here first or was it... how did it happen?
Oh my God.
You don't have to give details that you don't want to give, but I'm curious about your thinking process when you were 10 years younger.
Okay.
And if you would take the same step, if you were this old in Romania now.
Yeah. I will try to make the long story as short as possible.
We got time.
So the thing is, I never knew what I wanted to do with my life. But at some point, I wanted to become an architect and a part-time carpenter and a part-time city hall, like a mayor, actually, mayor, you know, like just this crazy...
yeah, it's a nice profession.
Yeah, but part-time carpenter as well. Very important. And it all shattered when I met an architect that told me, you know, it's just a lot of paperwork. So from that point, I knew I had to do what my mother did and follow in her footsteps and become a dentist. Mm-hmm. So for the last years of my high school, I studied to get into med school. And just a few months after I graduated high school, a few weeks actually, my boyfriend, who's still my boyfriend now, that's always the question whenever I tell this story, like, yes, he's still around.
Oh, we heard that
he does
story,
not have a choice. And he had the dream that we went to Vienna. Because he used to drive people to... because our hometown is just 5 hours away from Vienna. Mm-hmm. And he used to drive people to Budapest. And he was like, hey, tomorrow I'm driving some people to Budapest. Why don't we just like take the weekend and go to Vienna? And we came here. And I remember now, you know, there's like from Karlsplatz, if you drive to the opera, you can see the opera house and then the Stephansdom also in the distance. And in the evening, everything's lit up and it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting in the car and I was thinking, oh my God, imagine living here. And a few days later, we went back to Romania. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I will move there. Let's move there. So it took me about 10 minutes to convince him, called a few colleagues, and they were like, hey, can you still sign up for university? Because I needed an excuse to get away, you know, like, of course. And they were like, yeah, sure, you can still sign up. And I then called my mom, who is actually at her holiday house, and I was like, hey, just so you know, I did this thing and I'm moving. And she's like, can we talk about it when I get home? And I'm like, no, it's happening. So it took me about, I think, 25 minutes to make this life-changing decision. And I got everyone on board. I think today I would probably hesitate, you know. But because I was so young and I did not, you know, I didn't think it through, I actually did it. And I'm so grateful.
How long did it take from that 25 minutes thinking process to actual moving?
The week, the week on top.
Really?
What's it called? Like the next week, the week on top. I think it
could be a week on top.
No, I think I just translated from German to die Woche drauf.
Yeah,
you know, the week.
You're integrated already.
And yeah, we were already here signing up for the university. I mean, don't ask me how I chose my major.
what did you major in?
I did not major in.
You
I chose it. I
what,
dropped out. Politics. It
really?
Was one of the only ones that you did not have to apply. You know, there was no exam to get in.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I had to choose. So I was like, you know, want to, you know, like that song that children sing when they want to choose something. Like,
yeah.
That's how I chose between that one and I think it was another one. And I just went there.
Why did you choose a university? Because you were going to study. So it was your going to university age?
Yes,
okay.
And because, you know, I come from a family full of people who, you know, like have doctorates or like they have PhDs.
Moment. But I mean, at that moment, when moving to Vienna and choosing a university right then, that's what I meant. Was it wasn't a reason to stay in Vienna, right? Because Romania was already EU back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's what I meant.
Yeah. No, it was, I just needed an excuse to get my mom to, you know,
yeah,
on board of this whole thing, especially because she even built a second practice for me, like to, you know, be a dentist. So, yeah.
What happened? Why did you give up politics?
Same reason I gave up dentistry, didn't
just
it?
It
just not in, yeah, not. Because I was thinking, you know, like if I would have stayed in Romania and I would have, you know, chosen that path, I'm sure I would have, you know, eventually made money. But I would have never been happy because it was not something that interested me. And also, like, one of the main reasons why I didn't want to live in Romania was because a lot of animal cruelty. And then we, you know, this is a full circle. But, like, the summer before leaving for university here, I think I saved, like, 8 cats. So, you know, it was, yeah.
Where are those cats now?
Around, like, you know, we find we save one, we find someone to take care of it. So, you know, you're just like, this is the even when friends in Vienna, they say, oh, I want a cat, I'm like, I will put you on my list. And when there's and I, you know, when there's you know, someone who's like, oh, you know, you want a cat, I'm like, sure, I will just ask someone and then I will import like a cat in need.
I'm still waiting now for you to tell me when did photography started?
When I was, I think, about 12.
When you were taking the horrible pictures?
Yeah.
You thought back then that they were great?
Yeah, of
and
course.
And you write your name on it?
Of, you know what? Make all the fun you want of them. No one stole them. It worked.
True.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
But the thinking process of a teenager is great because you're in the exact age when you think that what you're doing is great, is fantastic, and you reached your peak and that's the best that it can be done.
I will.
And you take the courage and you publish those pictures and you show them to everyone and you say that you're a photographer because your name is on the picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but actually I don't believe that back then I thought that they were super great. But I think the thing with art is that you need to publish in order to get
yeah.
some feedback and, you know, then you will ignore that feedback, of course. But the thing is, as long as I have remembered, because I also did like pottery and like drawing and like I tried a lot of artsy things. I never actually really liked my work. I always thought, you know, it's okay, but, you know, you know, I could do better. But yeah.
What is your composition and thinking process when, let's say, there's a person who wants to, because you do a lot of branding photography, right?
Yeah.
There's a person who wants to rebrand themselves. They want to do portraits and new pictures, or maybe not portraits. They just say, I want to take new pictures of myself and start publishing content on social media and put quotes there with my pictures on it. So where do you start? What kind of pictures do you take to this person? Do you go and research the person, have an interview with them, or you just focus on visuals and highlights that the person might have in the physical aspect of it? How does it work? What's from A to Z for you?
The best results definitely come the more time I spend with the person, so I can actually see what they think like, the gestures that they make, because for me it's very important to also present like their authentic self, as far as possible, because it's, so many people don't have any experience in front of the camera, so they will likely not show their true selves in the first photo shoots anyways. So I do like to spend some time, like we do interviews, of course, like a video call, at the same time, I also like to see their vision. So, like a mood board, so I understand, where we're going with this. It's also super important because if they want to brand themselves, to find out what their target audience is. Because that's, where you, if your purpose is to use these pictures to grow your brand, you need to understand who you're talking to so that those people would actually look at your pictures, So like making someone who maybe is, an author, mm-hmm. wants to sell books on philosophy, look like a model, will like, even this is their vision, it will likely not be the best way to do it, but I also notice that the more time and the more sessions I do with people, they just become more and more confident. It's more easy to understand what they want, they already know their best angles, facial expressions, So, yeah, I would say it's an ongoing process, I have clients that I've been working with for 5-6 years, and they change so much. Mm-hmm. And they, you can see how their brand grows. And this is also a good argument when people are like, I'm only doing this once. I'm like, no, you're not doing this once. You're going to have to do it several times because you grow. Hopefully you grow as a person. Your brand changes, your target audience changes, and also the purpose of the pictures, because a profile picture will be very different from a picture that you might use on a cover of a book or something, So, it's just, I think it's all about trust and communication. And, the more I know, the easier it becomes for me to work with anyone.
When was it the moment that you as a photographer, what was the turning point when you said, yes, this is it, I made it. Now I'm a photographer and this is what I do for a living and this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Because, as you mentioned, probably started experimenting when you were much younger.
Mm.
And then did you have turbulences if you still wanted to do this, if this is what you were looking for?
Every year.
Every year. You mean back then or now?
No, even now.
Now.
It's like, yeah, I believe that every person who has their own business goes through turbulences. It's just like, the problem with photography is that I love it so much. And also it's my business. So I have two personas. I have the artist and I have the business person. Mm. And, do they fight sometimes, So usually my busiest season is towards the end of the year. So usually for the first month of the next year, I won't want to touch my camera, because I want to, when I touch it, I want to touch it with passion and, to be like, oh, I really want to take a picture of this, not be assigned to do something, mm-hmm. So it's a love and hate relationship. But I always ask myself this: if tomorrow I would win the lottery, would I still do photography? And as long the answer is yes, I will still do it.
Okay. But what was the turning point? What made you think this? That if you win the lottery, when did this start? What happened? There must be a point when you got very nice gig that you loved, or you got at some point maybe paid very well and said, oh, this is worth it, I'm being paid very well to do what I love.
Are photographers being paid? I'm just kidding.
Was that?
Are photographers being paid? Definitely seeing my picture on the first page of the New York Times, that was a moment that I was like, oh my god.
I was going to ask about that, but I like how we transitioned to this.
That was the moment I told my family, leave me alone with your university.
How long ago was that?
I think it was about 3 years ago. Oh my God, yeah.
Can you?
Almost. No, I think it's 2 years. 2 years.
What's the story? Can you maybe tell me the whole story of it? How did it happen?
New York Times?
Yeah. So just to clarify, your pictures went on New York Times magazine on the print version of the magazine, right?
Yeah, the newspaper.
The newspaper, yes.
Yeah,
okay, so
on the first page.
That's the story I want to hear now.
Yeah.
How did you get up there?
It was not the main picture, but it was the small picture on the right.
But on the front page.
On the front page, yes. So it's like, now the goal is to have the big picture, you know? It's like, you know, it's... I got an email from this woman who claimed to be an editor for the New York Times. And I was like, you know, she was like, are you available for this photo shoot? And I'm like, you know, let's say yes. Let's see what happens. I thought it was spam.
It was an email ending with New York Times?
It was. But still, it was some... I hope this person never listens. it was quite sloppy, you know. Like, the formatting was... It was correct, but like the formatting did not feel very official. It was just like me emailing you, hey, are you available for a gig next week? Talk to you later, bye-bye, you know, something like very loose, you know. So, but then the moment I accepted, I received 3 or 4 contracts. So I was like, okay, yeah, it's real, it's happening. And then, I did the first gig, was actually covering the vineyards of Vienna. So I had to go to several vineyards, photograph, you know, some like moments happening. It's like documentary style. So I was not allowed to intervene too much. And yeah.
Did they pay well? You don't have to say numbers. I'm just curious if you were satisfied with working with New York Times.
I would have done it for free.
Okay, that's one thing, but...
But they... pay very like a standard fee in the industry, and the industry, like the documentary photography industry, doesn't pay very well.
Okay.
So it's there's a lot, especially in the US, they're always complaining about this. You know, it's not bad, but you would expect them to pay more.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, how did your career change? How did it improve? I'm assuming it improved.
Yeah.
Of course. And what happened next?
I think it improved a lot also because I received a lot more confidence. And like I framed that article. The thing is, after it went online, then it, you know, went in print in the national version in the US, also international version in Europe, the rest of the world. And then I also got other gigs from the New York Times, you know, because once you're in the system, you are basically on, you know, like on a list for them to work with whenever they have assignments in Austria or like Vienna. So
that wasn't the only time you worked for them?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm a freelancer for them. I even got like an email where they tell you how to... you know, behave online. And first rule is not to talk about it on a podcast. I work with them every now and then. So I'm always very happy whenever they reach out. So
you mostly publish on print or online?
Both. But unfortunately, I kind of lost a few newspapers. I couldn't get them in time, you know. So now I just know that they were in print. Apparently, I also had another one on the first page, but also a small one. This time, I think it was a slightly larger. But if you don't get it the moment it's fresh off the press, you will never get it again. So, you know, I just know I was there. But yeah.
Could it be a good chance for the big picture on the front page with the Taylor Swift concert, for example, reporting or every time Vienna? Because what could make the front page of the New York Times that is a story from Vienna? It has to be extremely global, of global importance, right?
Yes. And it also needs to be assigned like to you by them.
Yeah.
So it's maybe that. I don't know.
That's the most recent.
I also am always very... surprised by the pictures that they choose, because, you know, I take more pictures, I just like submit them to the editor, and the editor chooses some pictures, you know. So I'm always like, okay, that's what you decided to go with.
I've done better pictures.
Yeah. But with them, it's all about very natural, very, you know, like I am, my style is, because I am a lot in commercial photography, you know, I go to the very aesthetic, you know, like very lively, you know, and they go for stuff that it's more, you know,
reporting for them is reporting.
Yeah.
As clear as possible and to show as much as possible in one picture, I'm assuming.
Yes, but I combine both because, you know, aesthetics.
And how did you end up with a studio, which is recent, right?
Yes.
By now, not that recent anymore, but...
Yeah, it's recent history. It's post-pandemic.
Maybe I'm personally curious, how did you manage? First of all, I would like you to describe the studio a little bit. Because
right now we're in the winter. Because right now it's a sauna.
Just tell me about your studio.
It's gorgeous. It has very, very large windows. So they're... it's called Studio Glasdach, which means, you know, sunroof, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's skylight, you know, there's a lot of... Yeah. And it's just bathed in natural light, which I absolutely love. And I searched for that spot for, I think, about 2 years. I mean, I didn't search for that specific spot, but I searched for something like that. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, my God, I need to be here. No matter the consequences, it's quite hot because of the huge windows.
Because that's the, I love that part, and I love your studio, and I love the light, and I'm... The fact alone that it has natural light and you can take the pictures with natural light. I mean, probably also use backlight sometimes. I mean,
yeah.
But I like the reflection. And yes, it could be hot in the sometimes, but it happens.
Yeah.
Besides that, because you found your dream spot, and how was it then on the backside of it? Because you also mentioned before that there you have two personas, the artist and business owner, or the entrepreneur. I would like to know more about the entrepreneurial part of starting that studio.
Yes.
Of course, you can touch the things you want to touch.
Mm-hmm.
You've been searching for the place for 2 years. You said, why weren't you finding a place in the first place? Because you weren't finding this place?
No, because I did not even know. I mean, I never envisioned this place. I just envisioned something with huge windows. That for me, it was like, you know, I don't want it unless it has a lot of natural light. And I do work a lot with artificial light as well. So, you know, it was not because if I did not have enough natural light, I couldn't have, you know, made it work. But for me, it was like, then I can work at home. You know, I want something that also makes me want to be there too. Edit, and also I'm also renting it out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was also a place where you feel great no matter what, you know. You can go there and, like, I love to have coffee there, you know, when clients come in, you know. It's just, like, very nice to also have this lifestyle situations as well, you know. Whereas when you go to some studios that are quite, you know, dark, only with artificial light, it's not inviting. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was a non-negotiable. And I also really wanted to have some parking spots. Because you have so much stuff, you know, so...
What area is that?
It's in the 21st.
Okay.
So it's, I have to cross the whole city to go there.
You live on the other side of the city?
Yeah, I live in the 5th, so... I have to cross the Danube every day to get there.
Okay. And how are your clients finding it, where the studio is located? Does anyone get grumpy about it? Like, oh, it's too far?
No. I mean, the thing is, if you take your car, then there's parking spots. Because the problem is if you have a studio somewhere more in the city, you know, you search for a parking spot for like, what, 40 minutes sometimes, especially if you have a lot of gear. And for the rest of the clients, I offer to take them, you know, with me. I'm like, hey, you know, just like, so no, so far no complaints. I mean, of course, I would have loved something a bit closer, but finding something like that is very unique, you know. So I was like, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to complain. I'm just going to take this and...
Let's go back to how did it work for you to start it as a business?
Yes.
Was it, first of all, was this the first time that you registered the business, or just walk me through it? So were you self-employed before this? And
with the studio?
With before the studio and after the studio. What did it change for your business-wise?
Nothing. There's just like more money going out of the bank account every month. And but I have to say, I'm also sharing it with someone. So I have a neighbor, and he's also a photographer. And we just discussed about, hey, you know, I would like to find a studio. And he's like, me too. So, you know, believe me or not, 2 weeks later, I stumble upon this place. Mm-hmm. I tell him, hey, you want to see it? We get there. The guy shows us the, you know, some... more, because there's this area is actually a renovated gas plant, so there's like several spots that you can rent. And we look at each other while we're in this, and we knew it. I'm like, okay, we're doing this, you know.
This is it.
This is happening. So, but I have to say, I feel like it also has changed my business a bit, because I have done a lot more shoots now in the studio. And it helped me find my style even more, which also, you know, attracts more clients, you know. So that's nice. And also the fact that up until now, I always had to rent a place out, and it was just like such a struggle. But now it's basically like you call me up, I need some pictures. I'm like, oh, just come over, you know. It just helps flow better, which means more images, which means more output, which means more people see it, which means, you know, more clients. So it's just same process but faster.
What is it some best feedback that you got from a client? Not in a sense that maybe it's not about 5 stars and on Google or something and then very nice studio or things like what is something that really touched you that's the kind of feedback I want to get?
I know exactly.
Which one?
Many years ago, I think I was basically just starting out, and I had this client who flew me to her home country to photograph her, and she was going through divorce. And I was photographing her in her kitchen because she is a recipe creator. And afterwards, she told me, you have taught me how to love myself again.
Wow.
And then I was, oh, my God, you know, this is what I'm doing it for. But it took us a lot of sessions to get there. But still, it's just, this is the kind of feedback you want, you know. Like, she saw herself through my eyes. And that helped her self-confidence, you know, so much.
Of course, I'm not going to ask more details on it, but was it a person or object that you photographed?
It was the person. Okay. So I did a couple of personal branding shoots with her, and it was always like whenever she would, you know, cook, and also her recipes as well, you know. So we were...
All right, you mentioned it.
Yes. So we would be just like... maybe in Spain or, you know, in her home country for a few days, we would close ourselves in the house, and just like she would cook, I would photograph her cooking, I would photograph the food, and then we would eat. Repeat.
Why do you think she was so happy about it? Could it be because it was 100% natural? She was really cooking, and you were just... like a phantom going around her and photographing without her looking at you?
No, because we would also have shots where she would look in the camera. I think it was just at some point she started feeling so relaxed around me, and that made her be able to show her true self. And also the way, you know, I see someone differently than they see themselves, and that sometimes is an angle that, you know, they have not seen before, and that, you know, boosts their confidence.
That's What now? I want to ask for the opposite. Can you mention a bad experience with the client? If you can.
Yeah, I mean, I fired them, you know, so ended very fast. Mm-hmm. The thing is, like, now after, I think my business is now 6 years old. And now whenever I feel like this is not something that's going to work, I immediately get myself out of that situation because I have learned that it's not worth it. So I'm like, okay, red flag, not happening. But at some point I was photographing, like, I think one of my first clients, and he was arguing with his assistant, and one of them was like, please photograph object A. The other one was, please photograph object B. And at the end of the day, we would still not know what we were doing. So I was like, guys, get on the same page or I'm leaving. They did not get on the same page. And I left. And I like, fired them. Like, I'm not working. They called me, like, please come back. And I'm like, no. Like, I'm not. And I also remember my partner was like, hey, if this is how you start your business, how is it going to work? And, you know, it works. So.
Do you have a lot of experiences like this?
No. Like, mostly just, like I said, because I believe that trust is one of the most important things when working with a new client. If I don't feel like I can trust them, and if I don't feel like I can trust them to trust me, it's not happening. Or it's not happening a second time.
Yeah. But how did you... Now I want to move to another conversation that I'm highly curious about it. Talk to me about sports. What are you doing? Why are you training 12 hours per day?
I am going to the Spartan race in a week.
And what's that?
It's like a race. I mean, I'm not racing because you can go competitive, but we've signed up for the open, so, you know, anyone can go.
Like a marathon kind of race?
It's 10 kilometers. With 1,000 meters altitude, so that's the hard part, and 25 obstacles. So you have, like, monkey bars, you have to carry, like, this stone that weighs 30 kilos on your shoulder for, I don't know, 100 meters. You have to take, like, logs and carry them uphill, so it's like...
That's what you're going to do there?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do there.
Why?
I don't know. I've always done sports, so
what sports have you done?
I think when I was a child, it was gymnastics. Then I did karate, but competitively. So, like, as performance sports, I was 3 times national champion.
Really?
Yeah. And
black belt?
No, I focused mostly on competitions, and I only got to think blue. And what else? Basketball, but you could not tell because I'm tiny. So, but they underestimated me. So, what else? And then, you know, a lot of, like, weightlifting, but not competitively. And now I do a lot of sports basically to just, like, keep sane, especially during the busy season.
And it's more of a mental therapy for you?
Yes. Yeah. Like, for years I used to do it because I wanted to be slim and I wanted to look good and, you know, like, just like... opposite of mental health benefits, like body dysmorphia. But now, like, a few years ago, I actually had a rough time, like panic attacks, like started therapy, a lot of anxiety. And then I realized that it helped me so much overcome this. So now I also do it to just release stress and also, you know, put some stress on myself, obviously, because I'm doing this race. It was just like some friends were like, hey, you want to do this? And I'm like, no, come on, let's do this. And I'm like, you know what? This will keep me motivated. So, you know, let's do it. So now we're 2 couples going there to...
It's hard for me to stop with this conversation. I'd like to keep going. I'd like to go a bit deeper into the reasons of doing this. I mean, you explained it, but I really want to know how it works for you, how this motivates you, because this is an external competition. So it's not an internal competition. Whatever you're going to gain out of this, how do you relate it? How do you take it in a personal level?
It is a personal competition.
It is a personal competition. You're there. Competition. I'm saying, but you're manifesting your strength outside in a sport, in front of other people, to someone else. So instead of, for example, as you mentioned, for example, could be a private therapy session. So why not private therapy, but sports? I'm not saying which one is better. I have no idea. But mm-hmm. I'm saying only why, what makes you choose this sport?
Because it's like I did not choose. I mean, I chose it, yes. But I mean, like, I believe that every competition, it doesn't matter what I'm doing next weekend, as long as I survive. What I wanted to say is that it's actually, it's a real deadline. Because if you do it with yourself, you can
lie.
You can lie, you know, like, I mean, of as much as we want not to, it takes a lot of dedication to be like, you know, hey, you know, you need to get fit in, I don't know, 5 months, you know. But if you actually put a real deadline by signing up for something, there's
paying
no
for
way
it.
Paying for it. There's no way around it, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's, and also I remember because when we decided to sign up, and I think it was May, I remember how our friends advertised this as a good idea because we will train together. And I was very open to the idea of actually taking some trainings, you know, together with friends because
mm-hmm.
I'm very busy. So it's very hard for me to make time to actually meet up with people. But if I can combine it with a workout, you know, I realized recently that I got to this age where we have friends that we do sports with. And I think that's amazing.
Hey, you want to hang out on Saturday? Sure, let's go carry some 30 kilo bags.
That's exactly what
gym.
We do.
Yeah. Well, what should I bring? Just bring another big bag that we can fill with stuff and
yes.
carry it around. It sounds like fun. Hey, it's going to be a great weekend.
Yeah. But I think it's so nice, you know, like you have friends that you used to go out drinking with and it was a bad influence. And now you have friends that you go do sports with.
Okay, first of all, do not call bad influence people who give you drinks. I do not accept that.
I mean, maybe they give you drinks with electrolytes, you know?
Yeah, they put drugs in your drinks like our parents used to tell us when we were young.
Yeah.
Don't go to that club because they're going to put drugs in your drinks. Like, who gives drugs away for free like
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Come on.
Where are these people? Let's find them.
Like, Mom, I recently learned that I actually had to pay for drugs.
Yeah. How many hours a day you train? You train every day now?
Yes, almost. Like I do have recovery, but my recovery is active, so I go for like a walk. And yesterday my walk turned into a 15-kilometer run, but that's something.
Really?
Yeah, it's just that, you know, it just that's a problem with sports. If you are not like a competitive, like an athlete or something, then you will find a lot of resistance towards doing sport. But the moment you start, you're like, oh my God, why haven't I done this earlier? You know, so, you know, that's why I just need to put my shoes on and then the rest will follow.
Now, how do you combine this with nutrition?
I don't.
Yeah, I saw you earlier eating.
Yeah. No, I was eating wraps, you know.
Yeah.
So no, I've had a very toxic relationship with my body and with, like, I was dieting when I was 12. Come on, you know, that's insane.
Yeah.
So for me, it's very important not to. I eat relatively healthy, but I will not say no to stuff. You know, like I always say that my body type is. I look like I train, but I also don't say no to a cookie. It's also meme culture, you know. I did not make that up.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, I just, I love food. So I will just try to eat so that I can sustain whatever I want to do, whether it's, you know, like a long day at the studio or I'm just, you know, running somewhere or lifting weights.
What's better for you, training early morning or late the night after work?
Never early morning. Never. I don't do mornings.
Yeah, when we talked about the pictures that you took of me and we were discussing the time and you said it could be early morning or afternoon and I was looking at the early mornings. No, not 5 a.m.
this is a problem when shooting outdoors, that, you know, for beautiful light, you need to shoot around sunrise.
Yeah.
And I cannot even pronounce it. How will I be? No, I can perform, you know, but if I choose, I will always choose sunset. I'm a night owl. I work at night. I can focus better. I can, you know, I usually go for my runs at 10, 11. Mm. So, you know, I prefer it so much over.
How much do you run per day? What's your regular running?
No, I don't ever. I run, I think, 2 or 3 times a week now. And it's, you know, around 8 to 10K. That's it. Not.
That's great.
Yeah.
For 2 to 3 times a week, that's great.
But I also run at Schönbrunn, so it's like some uphill running, which is terrible.
So when is this exactly? What's the date of the Spartacus?
Spartan. 8th of September. So
in about 10 days.
10 days, yeah.
Then what happens next? What's your next challenge, like in this sport?
Staying alive. I don't know. I've been looking up races to sign up for, but I don't know. Let's see how I survive this one. But I definitely know that I need something to follow up with so I can motivate myself to stay active. But I have to say, like, this whole year, I made it a challenge with myself to stay active every single day. So now I have like a streak of... Apple Watch users will know that, you know, you have your circles.
I have it in my Garmin.
Yeah, we have there you go. 240 days or something, like active every single day. Because I realized that I'm an adult and there's no one coming to make me do stuff. And this, you know, comes back to my work. In order for me to perform, I need to stay active because, you know, otherwise I will just... lay on the sofa, watch Netflix, and wait for someone to come and make me work. But there's no one coming. So, you know, the moment I realize that, I'm like, okay, I need to challenge myself somehow. Whether it's a competition, whether it's, you know, some schedule, some deadline, whatever. Just, you know, especially as self-employed, no one's coming to push you to do stuff. And you need to do it yourself. And boy, is that hard sometimes.
Yeah. That's very inspiring what you said, that you just have to take control of yourself and no one's there's no hero coming from.
Yeah, that's the worst news that you get at some point. Yeah. And you're like, damn.
It's especially around the 30s, that's when it starts to kick. You know, you got to do something about it, dude, because you cannot go on like this.
Exactly.
Either now or never. But maybe if I do when I'm 40. No, you're not going to manage when you're 40 if you continue like this. Just drinking and sitting on the sofa and watching TV and eating trash.
Yeah, that's the thing is when you realize, that's also same for like being healthy. That's the thing. When you realize that it's about being healthy and not about being skinny, you know, and it's, you know, scratch everything. I just read something recently and it was something along the lines of, being fat is hard. Being fit is hard. Choose your heart. And then I was like, you know what? Both take work. Because if you are, again, fat as in out of shape,
yeah,
it does not matter what you look like. It's about, you know, not being healthy. If you are out of shape, you will have a hard time going upstairs, like going up a flight of stairs. You will have a hard time tying your shoelaces. You will have a hard time, you know, running after the bus or whatever you're going to do. It, being fit, takes a lot of discipline. It's just as hard, but, you know, you just need to choose which one you want. And that's also something when it clicked for me and I was like, you know, just I need to do this, you know. There's no, you know, at some point you run out of excuses. Yeah.
Did you read some David Goggins recently?
No, just this meme.
But I think you would like this, the books from this guy. Have you heard about this guy?
No.
David Goggins. He's an ex-retired U.S. Navy SEAL.
Oh, I would probably love it. I love everything
love
that...
And he was... I mean, I don't want to spoil it to you, but his first book is great. I don't know if you read or you listen to books.
I read.
You read, and then I'll find this book for you. I have it at home. It starts with him being very fat and hating himself about many things he couldn't do. nothing. He tells it about it, that he was a piece of shit. He couldn't move from the sofa, and then suddenly he starts to change, and he starts to train to enroll to become a Navy SEAL, and this and that. And now he has a record of being the only American to have gone through several, to have completed several trainings, but I don't remember the names of all of them. I think you'd love this book.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I dig that stuff.
And the guy runs probably a marathon, a couple of marathons a week on a regular basis.
Oh my God, yeah.
He had knee injuries several times. He had knee interventions several times, and he just never stops. And the point is that he says it's not about reaching it. Yeah, I can see that in your elbow.
Taped everywhere.
Yeah. And I think you'd love this book. I'll get it for you.
Thank you, for sure.
Tell me one cool thing about Dos Glass Studio or whatever, or for something of your projects coming up. What should I keep an eye on?
Okay, there's quite a few things that are coming. Oh, wait, do we have 5 more minutes? Or
we have 100,000 more minutes.
Okay, great. I'll call Emma 35 and tell them he mailed it settled. So one thing that I recently did, and it's a passion project that I have not had in years, maybe because, you know, it's always work, and that is that I recently found photographs that my grandfather took. He was a photographer. He died a few weeks, no, months, something like that. Time is relative before I was born, so I never met him. But he was a photographer, not a full-time one, but a very passionate one. And I never knew what he looked like up until recently, when in my family they found an album with photographs, and there he was on a few pictures. And this brings me to two things. One, it helped me change my perspective a bit from, you know, using photography as a medium to create glossy things, commercial, buy this, you know, gorgeous things, to also a medium to preserve memories, because I never realized up until that moment how important it is to, you know, have photographs that they don't need to be, you know, perfectly from a technical point of view, but documenting life events. Very cool, because, you know, you never know who will want to see what you actually look like, you know, I did. And the second thing is I decided to recreate his photographs. So that's what I went to Romania for a few weeks, months. Again, time is relative until the Finanzamt wants their money. Then then I know what month it
time is.
Time is
not relative.
Yeah, that's whatever. And I talked to my family, and I got my grandma and her sister and my mom to recreate this picture 60 years later. Because we still have the same house that we did back then, so I could just like place them in front of the in front of the house and recreate them as much as I could. So that's something that I will publish, I hope, soon.
Where?
I don't know. Everywhere. Everywhere.
We should keep an eye on Instagram.
Instagram, or? Probably Instagram. Yeah, my personal that's
golden hour picture.
Yeah, exactly.
And it seems like your personal.
It is my personal. It's like,
I don't know. Do you have another Instagram? I didn't know that.
I have like one for portraits, but yeah. And then there's also the Instagram of the studio, but that's very professional. And yeah, my own is like, I always say it's a, what's it called? Like, there's a party in the back, you know, like my feed is like immaculate, and the stories are like just the craziest things that, you know, just pop in my head. I'm like, yeah.
Well, it sounds like super cool project. I cannot wait to see that.
Yeah, me neither. I have not been able to look at the pictures yet. That's how busy I've been, even though this was done a few months ago. No, again, July.
July.
When was
last it? Month. It was last month.
2 months already.
We're still in August.
Yeah.
We are for 3 more days, but we're still in August.
Yes, true. So, yeah, that's what you should.
A lot of things in your hands.
Yes.
It was nice talking to you.
Yeah, likewise.
And
I mean, I was doing all the talking, well, mostly.
That's what this is about. It's about you. It's not about me.
Yeah.
And I hope that you do find more time for yourself, and because work will always be there.
Yes.
Just try to... Sometimes we forget about ourselves, as you mentioned, but then when we're 50, hopefully we regret some things a lot.
That's true. I have a therapist on the speed dial for to remind me this, don't worry. But yeah, it's usually the beginning of the year is very chill, skiing, you know, not much happening. And then as the year just goes on, it gets busier. So I will take care of myself.
Looking forward to it.
Yes, me too.
Well, thanks again.
Thank you so much for
having me. Bye, everyone.